Well, we have good news from Kirk this morning. He and his wife, Terry, have agreed to accept 1 million Muslims into their home. So that lessens the burden on Europe and the rest of America. Hi, Kirk. How are you?
Ain't we swell?
Yeah.
Well, as you were talking, and I was getting dressed, so I missed some of it, but I was thinking about the anti-gang approach that was in Orange County the 25 years I lived down there, and that was they made the case that this was just terrible because of the random shootings and everything, and it was a terrible thing. They cracked down on them heavily, and they also did a lot of education and absolutely diminished it tremendously. So that system of talking, and sometimes you just have to put some people away. I mean, these are terrible folks.
Yeah.
However, I was thinking about how terrible they're by relationship. They're not compared to the Muslims.
Yeah.
I can't think of a single gang story where they would systematically rape their children, mutilate their daughters. They certainly don't beat their mothers and destroy their mothers. They don't expect the rape victim to be arrested. They expect themselves to be arrested. And yes, there's some, even though you might say there's some random murders, there's some accidental murders because they usually go after gang, you know, trying to knock off them.
They're usually shooting armed combatants. I mean, they war against one another. And both sides being armed. It's kind of like the mafia. The mafia very seldom would kill
a civilian.
Yeah, and so the mafia and America's drug gangs are far more civilized, far more appropriate in their behavior than our Muslims.
But we have no problem isolating them.
Right.
In a thing called a prison or exporting them or whatever. You know, and yet it's the same, the worst philosophy on history on how to treat a human being, a Muslim, and they act like it's okay.
Yeah. So if you kidnap in the name of religion, if you enslave in the name of religion, if you engage in pedophilia in the name of religion, if you sexually mutilate your children in the name of religion, if you rape in the name of religion, if you lie in the name of religion, if you decapitate and perpetrate acts of mass murder in the name of religion, if you are a terrorist in the name of religion, we can't pursue and isolate and criminalize that, but we can if you do it in the name of your
profit,
of your racial or neighborhood gang.
Yeah. So, but the same American that would agree that that's right to do can't put that same perspective on importing Muslims.
Yeah, right.
That just, you know,
it's bullshit. Yeah, I mean, when the United States decides that they want to off someone, that they want to fly a drone over and kill them, whether or not they kill their family members or not, whether that person has ever taken an American life or not. And they want to go kill them. Those that we're killing with drones, what percentage of those are fundamentalist Muslims?
Not all of them.
Probably all of them, right? And so we have no problem saying that what they're doing is criminal, and we're going to kill them when they're outside of the United States, but we can't make the connection that when they're in the country that we can't isolate them. I mean, I don't want to kill them. I just want to isolate them. And overseas, we're without any judicial process, without any trial, we're killing people for practicing their religion. And yet in the United States, we won't even isolate them or criticize them for practicing the same religion. You think that maybe there's a hypocrisy note being struck there somehow?
It's too stupid for words.
It's too stupid for words, isn't it?
I mean, we have a thing up here in Northern California called Folsom Prison.
And
the worst of the worst, which mostly are drug related, probably 90% of it is drug related, and then you get into the crime because of your drugs and so on. And some of it is just mental cases because we put them on the street, mental people on the streets nowadays, and they ultimately wind up in prison. but nothing that you could say about them.
We criminalize narcotics, don't we? And what is the principal thing that a narcotic does?
Well, it intoxicates you, I think.
Right. It affects your judgment, right? That's why it's called a narcotic. So the principal thing a narcotic does is it impairs your judgment, and we've made that a crime.
Mm-hmm.
What is the principal thing a religion does?
Same thing.
Impairs your judgment, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And particularly if that religion condones all of the things and encourages all the things that a moral and civil individual would consider to be abominations.
I don't see how you can grow up and think that those things are okay. Even I don't care how much you've been indoctrinated.
And if you're going to criminalize taking a narcotic that alters your ability to exercise good judgment, why would you not criminalize a religion that impairs your ability to exercise good judgment? You know, when those young Somalis were interviewed in Minnesota, mm-hmm. in Little Mogadishu in Minnesota, which last time I checked was part of the United States, and they said that they would prefer to be under Sharia law and to go back to Somalia, you think that perhaps their judgment has been impaired? In fact, would you expect someone to be that stupid under cocaine?
Not even that stupid.
No. So their judgment has been forever ruined. When a Muslim rapes a little girl, when a Muslim goes over and participates in a slave auction to sexually abuse a little girl, do you think that their judgment has been impaired?
It's been totally destroyed.
Yeah. When Boko Haram commits pedophilia while citing the Quran, do you think that their judgment has been impaired?
That's terrible. Terrible.
Yes. So, unfortunately, the West has a disease that is almost as destructive, as debilitating as Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And Merkel has that disease. The Abominator has that disease. Most everyone in the media has that disease, which is why they can't see their nose despite their face. Political correctness.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole reason that the armies and the Air Force and everything were telling us we have to fight them over there so they won't be over here. I mean, the whole thing of going overseas to fight wars.
Right.
We take the battle to them.
Right, so that they can't take the battle to us, and yet we brought them, and yet by taking the battle to them, it brought them here.
Yeah.
Boy, you think that was counterproductive? So they stole the argument that we're going to take the battle to them so they can't terrorize us, and that resulted in us importing terrorists by the millions.
Yeah. Think that through.
America, you are so stupid.
You are.
And you continue to make decisions and talk politics amongst two sides of the same coin, both of which have sold you out because you're stupid.
Yeah.
You know, how many of you waved the flag this past weekend? How many of you stood for the national anthem at some sporting event this past weekend? And you've just been sold a bunch of rubbish.
And you think you're doing a good thing.
Oh, God.
Compassion. You're compassionate.
Yeah, well, it's compassionate to inflict your home with Ebola.
Mm.
Yeah, giving hope to the Ebola victim. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling and terror. He exalted himself. But with the Lord, he was wrong and offensive, trespassing where he did not belong, and he died. Hosea 13:1. Before we go on, let's consider that, because this is the crux, this is the fulcrum upon which the entire prophetic account of Hosea rests. And for those who want to view Hosea, this is Yahweh speaking through the prophet Hosea. In context, go to yadayah.com And you'll find an entire volume of the book. I think it's the third volume. Azab, Being Forsaken. Reflected, they're presented there, every single word from that Yahweh spoke through his prophet Hosea. And so you can see Yahweh's issue. And the, well, this is the declarative statement of Ephraim, and we're going to consider that in a moment. The actual, the pivotal aspect of Hosea is when Yahweh said, my people are destroyed because they're stupid. My people are destroyed because of a complete lack of knowledge. They're stupid. My people are stupid. And that's why they are destroyed. They're destroyed because they're irrational. They're ignorant. And he then goes on to say, because you have forgotten my Torah, I will forget your children. Wow.
Wow.
So Yahweh is not exactly fond of this, the ignorance that is promoted under political correctness and under the name of religion. You're stupid. I mean, if you're a Christian, you're stupid. And so your soul is destroyed. If you're a socialist, secular humanist, and you think that man is the highest calling in the universe, and that the earth is your mother, that we belong to it, not the other way around, you're stupid. If you think that man is the solution to problems, like climate change, like floods of Muslims, you're stupid. God says, my people are destroyed because they're stupid, because they're ignorant, because they're apathetic, because they have forgotten the Torah, which is the antidote for stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have never claimed to be brilliant, have we?
No, no.
But we know where to find brilliance.
Yeah, you're always brilliant when you're quoting Yahweh.
That is correct. The antidote for being misled, for being played a fool, for being stupid, for being ignorant, is the Torah. It is the one avenue of hope that exists in our world. But when you're ignorant of it, there is no hope, and you will be played for a fool. Kirk, you've read the last chapters that I wrote for Volume 7 of Yada Yah, where I translate Yeshaya 17 and 18. And after Israel is thinned to the waist, after Damascus falls, what is the term? Yahweh uses the same language some six or seven times to describe the flow of Islamic terrorists into Israel. Do you know what terminology he uses?
Well, I remember it's the metaphor of water, so it's like a tidal wave.
A tidal wave.
Okay.
A tidal wave. That's exactly right. Do you know what the headline of the story that someone just sent me? It's from CNN. You know what the tidal wave reads?
Well, I'm sure it says the same thing.
A tsunami.
Yeah, it's
a tsunami. Yeah, tsunami of Muslims.
I have read a bunch of that, yeah.
I was just watching a video, and the Muslims, ignoring the rule of law, ignoring the Hungarian police, decided that they would just run across Hungary. And it shows, this video shows scores of Muslims, almost all young men, running across and trampling down a cornfield. And then as they move, and the video is the police chasing them and really doing nothing, you the further they go, the more and more of the cornfield that is just trodden down. And Yahweh also uses that metaphor as well. They tread underfoot everything that they touch, destroying that which was productive, flooding as a tsunami. It's exactly what he predicted. And he also predicted that they would come in such numbers that there would be no way to prevent them. Like all of the Hungarian Border Patrol, they were armed. Not one of them shot.
You ain't got that
of course, they're not going to shoot. We don't have that many bullets, and you can't even imagine a person shooting that many people. I mean, it's just it's unimaginable.
No.
And so, what do you do?
You just have to let them run over you.
And you're treading underfoot as they destroy everything in their path.
Sure. It reminds me of the story told me by one of my teachers who was in the Korean War. He said, "We didn't have enough bullets. There's 300,000 people coming up here, and they just wiped us all out." I mean,
yeah.
One of maybe 17 or 18 people left.
Yeah. And in this case, this is one of the rare cases that the Muslims aren't armed, but they're nonetheless carrying the most deadly bomb that could ever be been unleashed, something vastly more deadly and than any nuclear bomb has ever been designed to be. They're carrying Islam with them, a religion that renders them incapable of being moral.
So why are they coming?
Because
if you love Sharia law, why don't you stay there and practice your Sharia law?
Because they have a fight between two interpretations of Sharia law, the Sunni and the Shia. And to stay there, if you're a Shia in an area overrun by Sunni terrorists, they're going to kill you. And if you're a Sunni in an area overrun by Shia terrorists, they're going to kill you. And so they're fleeing there because they were caught at the wrong place at the wrong time in this fight between Muslims.
But you should be regrouping and going to join the group that you favor.
You would think so, wouldn't you?
Well, I mean, you know, if you really believe it that strongly.
Yeah, but you know, one of the problems is that Muslims know that that Islam condones lying. So how would you ever trust someone? So let's say that you're running Hezbollah and somebody is coming to you and says, you know, the Islamic State ransacked my village and I fled them, but now I want to stand up against them and join Hezbollah.
Yeah.
Why would Hezbollah trust you?
No, they won't.
Or vice versa. Why would anybody trust anybody? You know, here's the Turks now. You know, America is coordinating almost all of its bombing runs using the Kurds. And today, the Turks flew murderous missions, bombing runs over the Kurds.
Yeah.
So, no one wants to trust anybody.
I know, and those are NATO members.
Right. You know, America can't find anybody. We're training what we consider to be non-fundamentalist Muslims, non-jihadist Muslims to pick up arms, and we're spending $1 million per
weapon.
Weapon holder. We're spending $1 million per weapon holder, even more on their weapons. And the fact is that the moment that they confront either Hezbollah or the Islamic State, they surrender and turn over their weapons. There is no trust to be found in the Islamic world. Well, read the Ninth Surah. It explains why. So this begins, when Ephraim spoke, there was trembling and terror. Trembling and terror. When Machiavelli, who wrote The Prince for Italian lords who sought to become popes. And the purpose of The Prince was to prepare Italian lords to be effective leaders of the Roman Catholic Church.
Correct.
And the thing that is so unusual about the book is where what he says, in essence, is that well, it would be lovely to be loved. And it is possible to motivate people by being nice to them, by actually looking out for their interests. He says, you know, it's a lot of work, and it doesn't work all the time. There's a much more effective way to exert your influence and control. And he says that's to be vicious, to terrorize them. If you terrorize enough people and do it publicly, Machiavelli wrote, if you're so uncompromising, if you're so ruthless in your exercise of power, no one will dare stand up against you. And so what he did is he caused a reign of terror to be perpetrated by not only the Roman Catholic Church, but by the Holy Roman Empire. It was run by
terror. All the kings followed suit, too. I mean,
correct.
English picked up on that. I mean,
right. So did the Italians, so did the Spanish, so did the French. And there was a reign of terror. And in fact, the implements of terror, if you want to see the most terrorizing implements that man has ever created, go to a museum in Europe that reveals the implements of torture that were created by the Roman Catholic Church, its priests, and were deployed by the clerics under its dominion.
If you go on the Vatican tour, you'll see paintings of them doing that.
Right.
And using those tools, too. They celebrate them.
Correct. So when religious pontificators speak, people tremble. When Lenin, who was the, and Stalin spoke. Now, they were the grand orators on behalf of socialist secular humanism. Mm-hmm. When they spoke, people trembled because they killed them. When Mao Zedong spoke, people trembled.
Yeah.
You know, when the heads of human institutions speak, people tremble.
Yeah.
Why? Because they're hellish, because they terrorize them.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing has changed, Ephraim. Political and religious leaders have always been terrorizing. And the reason that they impose these things, Machiavelli was really clear, to exalt oneself. If you want to be exalted, do so by terror. He exalted himself. With whom? The Lord. Who is the Lord? Well, yeah, well, it defines who Baal is. Baal is the Lord. And it's a proper name, and it's also a title. It's a very descriptive name. It means
Lord.
Yeah, to possess, to control, to lord over. Who established the Lord serf political and economic conditions that were perpetrated on Europe for 1,000 years?
Yeah, the Catholic Church, they
right.
still had to have somebody managing all the property, so you have to have a noble
right.
situation.
Right.
You know, and
that was the Lord.
Right.
And he was actually referred to as the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Theodosius established the feudalistic state of Europe, growing out of the Holy Roman Empire and the Roman Catholic Church, that lasted almost 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, even the mafia is built on that.
Right, it
organized,
is.
Organized Roman
right.
crime syndicate.
The Lord is Satan, according to Yahweh. If you've got a religion that speaks on behalf of the Lord, it is speaking on behalf of the adversary of Satan. Ephraim, as a religious and political entity, acted and spoke on behalf of Satan. You know why the Quran says that that Allah engages in terror?
Well, terror is the way Muhammad got
power. Yeah. The reason that the Quran says that Allah kills, that Allah tortures in hell, that Allah is a terrorist, is because the Lord and Allah are one and the same.
All right.
And the Lord and Allah are Satan. That's what they revel in. That's what they celebrate. Death. Terrorism. Fear. They are fear mongers. The Quran says very clearly, he who fears will obey.
Obeys. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. I wouldn't necessarily any longer say that any of these politicians are smart, but they are shrewd. Yet, if they bring in, as they're proposing next year, 8 million Muslims and eventually the consequences of that,
mm-hmm.
Why do they think that that's not going to, you know, if I was the czar,
mm-hmm.
if I studied a little history, I would know that the czar, even with all his army, couldn't stop or squash the civilian population, much less one that's armed. And those are unarmed people, you know, for the most part.
Right.
And what are they thinking?
Right. They're not thinking.
Well, I mean, they can't be that collectively. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think that what they're doing is they're importing anarchy. They're importing terrorism and anarchy. And because of that, what are they going to be able to do? They're going to be able to justify a greater influence of a police state, more draconian measures, more dictatorial powers for them.
But think it through. You can't run a Muslim country now with a military, with the Third Army in Iraq.
Saddam Hussein managed to control Iraq. Muammar Gaddafi managed to control Libya. The King Abdullah manages to control Saudi Arabia. Dictators. As a dictator. You cannot control a Islamic country with popular voting. As a representative government, as a rule of law, just dictators.
Basically, you can't let them choose what they do.
No,
somebody
you can't.
Has to be telling them what to do. Otherwise,
and those dictatorships are hellish. They're draconian. They're Machiavellian. And so the only way that an Islamic country can be controlled is through a dictator. So if you import 8 million Muslims, what are you importing? The need to impose a dictatorship to remain, to retain order.
God, so, is it thought out like that? I mean, I know that's the result. Are they really thinking that?
Are they that shrewd is what your question is?
Yeah.
And I would ask you, does it matter?
No,
but it is a matter of curiosity. I would agree. Have they thought? You know, I think with the Abominator, for example, he's thought it out well enough to know that he and his ilk will prevail when they do this kinds of things, because those people will favor them over others. So they're stacking the deck, which was previously close, in their favor. Now, is Merkel's does she view herself as someone who won election based upon the status quo, gaining a huge advantage by letting in a million or more Muslims that will view her as their great Messiah? Yeah, I mean, she's at least to that point. Are they all the way to the point to recognize that Muslims are only controlled with a dictator? And even then, the conditions are disgusting, despicable to live under. Empowers their ability to be exalted? Yeah, I think so. I think it's so. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling and fear. He exalted himself. And here, in the case of Merkel and Europe, they're exalting themselves by bringing in trembling and fear. They are speaking on behalf of importing terror. They represent Ephraim.
My gosh.
But here it is, and on behalf of the Lord Baal. So we know now that trembling and terror are the manifestations of religion and politics. And militarism, but the fact that they were exalting themselves, this is the ego. What is politics? It's the arena of egos on behalf of Satan. And God says, oh, but, you know, the Lord, he knows who I'm talking to. It doesn't matter what you call him. It doesn't, you know, the ends justify the means. That's Machiavelli. What does Yahweh says? He was wrong. He was offensive. He went where he did not belong.
And adopted what he should not have ever done. Yeah.
Yeah. He was wrong. Is God saying, I will forgive them because I love all the little children? No, he said he was wrong.
He's wrong. Don't kill him.
Did he say that all the little children are beautiful in God's eyes? No, he said he was offensive. Did he say, hey, you know, God's accommodating? No, he said they went where they did not belong. They were declared guilty. They were offensive, faulty. They suffered the penalty of becoming desolate, lifeless, abhorrent, forsaken, and damned. And they died. So here's Yahweh saying that if you associate with the politics of Satan, of the Lord, if you associate with those who exalt themselves, those who implement trembling and terror, what did we call the first bombing run on Iraq?
The term is...
Shock and awe.
Shock and awe, yeah.
Yeah, shock and awe. When the United States shoots a missile from a drone, there's trembling and terror.
Well, sure.
So when you're arming the Islamic jihadists, there is trembling and terror. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling and terror. He exalted himself in the Lord. He was wrong. He was offensive, trespassing where he did not belong, and died. So the consequence of this, according to God, is not life. It's not forgiveness. It's not a relationship with him. It's death.
Yeah,
death. So as we move on, as we continue this search, we're going to read one more line out of Hosea. Hosea continues to read this also from that same chapter. And that's really important. From the same chapter. Now, it's an acknowledged, Kirk, in Hosea 13:1 that Ephraim was in what state? What was the result, the end result of Ephraim being, acting as a terrorist, Ephraim exalting himself, Ephraim working and being motivated to being controlled by Satan, the Lord, and being wrong and trespassing where he did not belong? What was the net result of that from God's perspective?
Well, the Ephraim net result of the fact that he was intoxicated. I mean,
yeah, he was religious. Yeah.
Religious, yeah.
Right. But the consequences, and he...
He's taken away.
And he died. Definitely. And he died.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he died. Right?
Yeah.
All right. So Ephraim was killed by Ephraim represented a lot of people. It represented the religious and political establishment of the Northern Kingdom. And he died. A lot of people. That's a plague, man. When you're talking about an entire civilization.
Destroyed.
And they died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're talking about a plague of death. So by the time you get to the 14th chapter, 14th verse of the same chapter of Hosea, it reads, from the possession of Shaul, Shaul is Paul, I shall redeem them from the plague of death. By the way, the same word, muth, is the same word. I shall deliver them. Where is your plague of death? Where is your destruction? O Shaul, O Paul. So the consequence of being religious is to die. The consequence of being associated with the Lord is to die. Yahweh said, you know, I'm going to redeem them from Sheol, from Saul. Shaul.
Yes.
Who is Paul? He's Christianity.
He is the plague of death.
Right. From Christianity, I'm going to redeem them. From the plague of death, I shall deliver them. So where is your plague of death? Where is your destruction, O Pauline Christianity?
It's all over the world now.
Wow. So God said, you know, Ephraim's dead. But Ephraim was reborn. Just as God said, the Roman Catholic Church is going, I mean, the Roman Empire is going to die, but out of the Roman Catholic Empire is going to be a beast that is vastly more vicious, that's going to tread upon the whole world, not just part of it. That's the Roman Catholic Church. And the Roman Catholic Church was founded by one Paul. He's the founder of the Christian religion. He says, where is your destruction now? Where is your death? So the religion leads to death, but Yahweh redeems from religion. He delivers us from religion, like Pauline Christianity.
What could have... I'm what could a preacher do with this verse? I mean, they would just go. They'd have to shut down.
They have to shut down. Yeah, I'd be, but of course, they're very seldom confronted with it because their translations are inaccurate. You know, their book is named what's the word on the front cover of their book?
Bible.
And what is that word based on?
It's Babel.
Babel. And what does Yahweh call Babel?
Confusion.
Confusion. And who did he associate with Babel confusion?
The Lord Baal.
Yeah, Satan. All right, the whore of Babylon.
Yeah.
And they're carrying around a book called Babel, Confusion. No wonder their translations are so errant, so misleading, so confusing. Yeah. That's why they would never be confronted with it, is they're carrying around a book claiming it is the inerrant word of God, and it's actually from Babel, confusion. Yeah, that's not good. So when you deal with that, now you're in a position finally to understand who God is talking about when he says in Yashayah, Isaiah 28, whoa, this warning declaring an extreme lack of understanding and the prevalence of confusion and delusion to the presumptuous, arrogant, and conceited leaders of the intoxicated of Ephraim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a prophetic statement dealing with our time. Ephraim's long gone.
Oh, yeah. Long before that.
Right. So you have to say, well, who is arrogant and wrong and acting in the name of the Lord? The Roman Catholic Church?
Yeah.
Christianity with their Babel Bible?
Yeah. The whole group.
The whole group. God warned you. Don't say you weren't warned.